Okay, we're gonna go ahead and get started with second presentation of the afternoon. Discussion of the development of a multi-dialectal dictionary in southeastern Tibet by Ellen Barty and from Gisang Tering.
Yes, very good. Thank you. Good afternoon. Today I want to talk about a dictionary that we've been working on for the last 5 years, and mostly in earnest in the last 1 year. We have a team of about 7 people. I'm one person who works full-time on another job, and half of our team also have full-time jobs. My co-presenter, who is not here, after a rigorous attempt, we got a Chinese passport for him and then were denied the visa. So it was greatly disappointing that he couldn't make it. Gisang Tering, I'd like to introduce him though. This is him. Is that a little dark, or is it my computer? This is him with his dad in his home area of Nakara, and it's one of the dialects that are involved in our project. So we are up in the other part of the border from Karma's language in Bhutan. In China, what we often speak of as Tibet is actually the Tibetan Autonomous Region, which is a political designation for the Tibet. This map here is more of historical and cultural linguistic Tibet. The average elevation there is 14,000 feet, but that includes Mount Everest, so not really a fair designation. I guess it's a bit of loose connection there. These three broad dialect categories are kind of what a lot of linguists within and without China refer to, kind of cluster language varieties across the region into central, which is in and around Lhasa. We've all heard of Lhasa. And then the yellow representing Amdo up in Qinghai province, and then some of the Tibet Autonomous Region. Both of these within the language varieties have very little inter-dialectal variation. They're pretty homogenous. It's high, flat, kind of not a lot of mountain ranges to go over. The one in between is the one we're working on in Kham. Kham is kind of like has been kind of like a garbage category. Everything that doesn't fit into Amdo or Central has been thrown into Kham, and it's not really a legitimate classification of dialects. There's a lot of variation, a lot of unintelligibility across the dialects. We ourselves work down here in the very southeastern corner of Tibet in northwest Yunnan province. China has 10 Tibetan autonomous regions, 10 autonomous Tibetan prefectures, I'm sorry. And we're in Diching, Tibet Autonomous Prefecture. In this area, there's actually 3 counties, and one of those counties is Lisu Autonomous County. So even within this area, we have a lot of different languages that are influencing one another. Down to the south of us, there's not only Lisu, there's also Naxi, which are the biggest minority languages, and then there's 13 other nationalities. So on the periphery of Tibet is where we get a lot of variation. Another thing that I want to talk about is just the topographical influences on dialect variation. In thinking about how to present kind of what we've been doing on the dictionary, I think I want to talk about 3 areas that impacted the direction that we've taken as we developed this dictionary. The first being topography. We live in this area, Jetong, which is about 10,500 feet or 3,200 meters. Tibetans in the area of the whole Diching Prefecture live between 2,600 to 3,600 meters, which is like 8,000 to 12,000 feet. So up at this area is the high flat. Jetong is the plains of the kings, where kings do their battle historically. And this has the most speakers, about 60,000 speakers that can understand one another. And it's the biggest dialect in the area. The other parts of Diching are all about rivers and valleys. People live down here in valleys or up on the mountaintops that you can see. Sometimes a village, just a few houses. And sometimes each one of these, if you shout across the river, you can almost hear each other, but dialects are different. So this has impacted what we want to do in our dictionary. It's highly unlikely that each one of these language varieties will have its own opportunity to become represented and to have its own dictionary. I don't think that because it's a small speaker population dialect, it should be excluded from that. So we just decided, kind of serendipitously, to just include a variety of dialects of people that we are working with. Some of, like, Gesang Tsering, my co-presenter, his dialect only has 2,000 speakers. And that's quite common. 2,000 to maybe 8,000 is probably the average number of speakers for the populations we're working with. Another big influence in Tibetan areas that a lot of you are familiar with is the issue of diglossia. In addition to all the spoken varieties, there's also this huge, massive literature written Tibetan that bears the weight of history, having been begun in the 7th century, and is a vehicle for a lot of literature, mainly religious, political, and some historical literature, largely religious. Between these standardized varieties and the spoken or the vernacular varieties, there's a huge, huge gap. It's like two languages. You can think of it as two languages. Kids in our areas that study Tibetan study it as though it were two languages and learn it as though it's two languages, because there's very little use in practical, so very little functional literacy going on. Standardized varieties that I'm talking about here are classical literary Tibetan, which goes back to the 7th century, so in a big body of that has not changed. So you can imagine the gaps between contemporary spoken vernaculars and those more static classical varieties. And also modern literary varieties, those that have grown up and around political, religious, or cultural centers, like central areas surrounding Lhasa and Shigatse, being politically and religiously important, a lot of documentation. They have their own sort of stylistics of a modern literary Tibetan. Out in Amdo as well, Amdo has a, I don't want to get into too much detail, but not being tonal, it's retained a lot of its initial consonant clusters. It tends to have the highest literacy rates because there's more of a one-to-one correspondence within China, I should say. And they have a kind of a growing authorship. A lot of the new literary forms are on Nando, Dzongka, Karmazin, being the language of Bhutan, Ladakh out in India. All of these have their own literary forms, and there's others. Probably we need to include diaspora Tibetan and others that have grown up, maybe even Jarom. So all of these are Pakka. I mean, they're all standardized, and people recognize them as such. No one challenges that. What are you doing with writing Lhasa Tibetan? You know, it's already a recognized form. Outside of that are the non-standardized forms, which is what we're working with, the vernaculars. So this diglossic situation has also influenced our choices in developing this dictionary. We work really hard to establish written Tibetan etymologies. Tibetan lends itself well to being possible to write things phonetically. You can just write using Tibetan letters. But I don't think the random approach would be beneficial to our own team and the local community. Also, just as far as credibility, for people to say they read and write Tibetan is a huge thing, because it's highly revered and honored. And also as a bridge to literacy. Down the road, once they can learn their own forms in written Tibetan down the road, it's easier for them to transition to other varieties of Tibetan. I say here, if possible, we have tons of dictionaries in our office, and we're always looking for forms from any kind of dictionary we can get our hands on, from any area that's a reasonably published dictionary. There's never been an effort to put together a lexical collection representing the dialects that we work in. So that's kind of our effort. We can still find over 90%, maybe 95%. We can trace it back to written Tibetan etymologies. But sometimes we can't, so it's not always possible. Either we haven't looked hard enough, or we don't know where to look, or else there is none. There might be borrowings. Very common words, like big and small, we don't know where those come from. So based on what we know about historical sound change and correspondence, we kind of make our own writing in Tibetan. Let me give you an example. This is three entries from our dictionary. Here are the five different forms on the first line, represents five varieties, all based on the written Tibetan. If you look at the second line over S-P-Y-I-N, that initial consonant cluster, S-P-Y, in some dialects has gone to sa, sha, sha, sa, with a tone change in B. The second form for glue, in one dialect, it actually means leather glue, but in others, it's just a generalized term for glue. Those are both attested and written Tibetan. The third one, however, isn't. Starting from these forms here, at least as far as I know, we haven't been able to find it. Based on sound change, the first syllable works well, which is from water. Water is a likely suspect for making a compound to make the word glue. And each of these sound changes are ones that in those particular language dialects make sense. So this is what our toolbox, we use toolbox right now, about the only thing we've found that works for this multi-dialectal approach would look like this. Down here would be example sentences and other things, but these two fields here, so the one word with the dialect representations and the two fields down here that says C also. Okay, I'm gonna go a little faster. User friendliness is also a big goal of ours. We want it to be used by local people. It's not really made for linguists, although we hope it's useful for linguists and scholars. So we're interested in having audio files to accompany it, visual for things that are difficult to describe in particular, and we want to present it in digital format. I mean, we work with rural people that have totally gone by landlines and everything straight to cell phones, and the new technology is what people are very interested in. If they can run something on their cell phone or, you know, initially maybe download it onto their computer, it's amazing. You see someone farming with two big cows and bring, they answer their iPhones, so it's quite cool. I'm just gonna show you a little bit here of what this looks like. When we present it, I think the screen has to readjust. Let me see if I can make it do that. Okay, maybe it's not going to work, but this will be good enough. So this is the page that people will go to. Each one of these has various sub-menus that you can look. Sorry, it's going off the screen for some reason. And here, various language varieties we're talking about. I purposely call them language varieties and not dialects. We can talk about that at a different time. And here we can look at the Chinese and English index and the dictionary. I'll just close that. It kind of takes, right now we've only found a way to make it work in Firefox. Computers are just wonderful and also insane. I'm not a computer person. Like, I don't even know how to make this fit my screen, but for whatever reason. All right, so this is the screen that people will get. Here is the sound files they can click on.
Ga.
And have.
Ga.
Go. Come on.
And they can see how all of these words are related to one another, and they're related to written Tibetan. So we're hoping that it'll help tie the communities together. There's a little bit of an interface problem between the guy that's been helping us with HTML and Toolbox. He was using the wrong hierarchy. So right now, not all the example sentences come out. This is an example of a picture we might use. The word here is ganit, which is pillar eyes. And here we talk about the three spaces between the front pillars signify how big a house it is. That's when we might use an example of that. We can, up on the top, there's a syllabary or alphabary of Tibetan. You can click on that. So of course you can search on written Tibetan Chinese or IPA or whatever you want. But you can also click on the various syllables, beginnings, and go to a particular entry. Something there, sorry. Yeah, so eventually we'd like to, forget it. We'd like to link it into video files where we have some text files, and then if we click on that, it'll send them to the text that actually exist. I think my time's up and I'm finished too. 5 minutes left, cool. So I'll show you. I can't really see my screen here because for some reason it's not resizing like it should. Let me just do this really quick. Well, that's okay. So down the road, what we hope to do is not only, right now we have about 3,600 written Tibetan entries, we would like to have about 8,000 recorded recordings that accompany those. We would like to be able to have a cell phone app and Android app and all of those things that are way beyond me, but we think it would be really cool for local people to say, hey, look, written Tibetan, which they're always told, your language can't be written in written Tibetan. Of course it can. It's a Tibetan language. And they can say, hey, and this is what it sounds like. And people love to hear their own dialects. They love to laugh at each other. So we think, hopefully down the road, it'll be very useful. We also can have, like, let's see. I can't see what I'm clicking on, so I can't even do a search for you. But yeah, we have various bird sounds of birds that we've had recorded, the sounds, the songs of the birds, and different things that people can listen to. That's it. Thanks.
So we're a little ahead of schedule. We actually have about 15 minutes if people want to ask questions.
Does anyone know how to resize a window? I'll start with the questions.
Yeah, try the green.
Yeah, this is not, it's actually the screen that resized only for when I hooked up to
the
overhead.
Yeah, the
so there's a way to resize it, and I thought it was right here, but that's okay.
Hindi, I think.
Yeah.
What's that?
Click on the numbers there,
the smaller one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't help.
Yeah, that made it worse.
The smaller, okay, it's all right. Go ahead, you can ask me questions. I think I can multitask a little bit. Are there any questions?
Yeah. Okay, well, was there any way to filter by dialect if you just want to see just your dialect, or is it all?
Yeah, that's also one of our goals. We did have little tabs, and you could click on the dialects, but what happened was it just took those words out of the database. So if we can get it worked out, that's one thing. I just want a dictionary of Dohuang, and we can either print that out, or we can just look at that particular one. That is one of the goals. Should be doable.
I apologize if I missed it. It seems like when you do the multi-dialect dictionary, the difficulty is that if for each lexeme you have five ways to say that and the meanings are the same, then you're good. Mm-hmm. And then the difficulty comes when it doesn't work out that cleanly. Have you run into those
problems?
And then so what's your approach?
Yeah, there's different kinds of problems. Like, for example, words for barley, which you can either use gara or ne, and different dialects tend to use flip over and these different things. So how do you represent that is one problem. Also, there's different senses. Sometimes if it's just one unique variety, like in Nakra, this word for bird, for chuff, also means the Darien Jackdaw. We'll just make a note for that. But if there's actually consistent semantic differences, we put it on a different level so that the first definition will be followed by those pronunciations, and the second definitions will be followed by separate pronunciations. It is a challenge, to lay it out semantically so we all don't get too confused. And sometimes we don't know. When we're working with so many, in our office we represent five varieties. So oftentimes we can, kind of work it out as a team. But then there's other places that we've just gone and got word lists from or a few texts. And that's we have very little information on certain areas.
And you mentioned that the primary audience was not linguists, but speakers. Does that make those problems easier or harder? Does that make sense? Like, do you feel like you could be more pragmatic about delivering some meaning through the dictionary? Because the audience is not a linguist who is going to fixate on, put that positively. Who's interested in the semantic overlap and everything that you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think people tend to be interested, and they tend maybe to nitpick too. I think we'll get nitpicked a lot, being kind of a new form, pushing the edges of what's acceptable for written Tibetan. I'm not sure that the people that we're targeting are any less interested in some of those semantic things. So we expect that things will be adjusted as we go and kind of adapted. And we hope to make it more, once we have a version that we feel comfortable with, to post it and then have other people contribute that we can look and see how they're contributing. It's not an easy, like, simple solution. I think people are very interested in what things mean and what the exact form is. And when you have recordings, it does help us quite a bit, because they might just challenge, oh, no one says that, and then they hear it and go, oh, yeah. That helps bridge some of that, but it's still problematic. We do try to include a lot of example sentences for how it's used in context, rather than just talk about it. Does that answer your question a bit?
Yeah, thank you.
It's not an easy issue. I mean, it's ongoing. We think of it as very dynamic. It's nowhere near completed. Unlike a printed version, we probably will print a version, but we're more interested in putting it up and make it usable and adjustable.
When do you hope to make it available to the public?
Last spring. So probably the fall at this point. We have a few editors that are Tibetan scholars. Because of the issue of diglossia, we've kind of picked our Tibetan scholars carefully who get it, because there's a lot of register bumping up when they realize once it's written, then they feel like it should be the written variety, which is kind of foils what we're trying to do. So we're hoping kind of to get it through this editorial community and then present it online.
And then, as far as the application, the handheld application is concerned, how do you envision what type of functionality that should be available as a smartphone app? So what should people see use cases?
Handhelds a lot to search Tibetan dictionaries, for written Tibetan forms. It's quite common. It's more common in central areas. It's becoming more common where we are, and people are very interested in written Tibet just because of its status. So in a similar way, you can search either on the written Tibetan form, the English or the Chinese, and come up with a word with the sound files, everything there. So mainly for people curious or people that want to, we recently published a book of the birds of Shangri-La, and we've chosen to write it the way that people speak it. So if they wanted to look up those words, for example, they could use a dictionary and look up those words and see the connections to written Tibetan. Is that what you mean? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I just was wondering, if I type the head word in the vernacular, for example, why should I use the English translation if I don't speak English, for example? So
yeah, and very few people do. English is just kind of like the popular language. It has kind of a similar status to Tibetan for different reasons.
Okay.
Chinese is a necessary language. So
so they find it exciting to
yes.
use the English translation of
yes.
the mother tongue.
Yes.
Interesting.
So if you type the head word, we use IPA here, but IPA is very, very far away from what people kind of functionally use, but that's why we make that the sound file. At least kind of there's some ambient learning there.
Yeah, but you don't have the definitions written in vernacular.
No, for a number of reasons. Down the road, it might be written in literary Tibetan, so outside Tibetans could have access to the local. That's kind of an ongoing problem. Right now, we don't have anyone literate enough in our particular vernacular. As a team, they've learned Tibetan since they joined. Written Tibetan. There's almost no literacy where we are. The monks can read, but they couldn't write, you know, where are you going? There's no functional literacy. They can read some archaic forms for chanting purposes.
You could use Visa to just record, have them record their definitions, and then someone else at a different time could transcribe.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because you can put audio into any field, and
right.
just push the button and record.
Right. It's a nice idea. I liked what Nick Evans was talking about as far as the guy who was working with just recording randomly what these birds are. In our area, everyone has a different idea of what plants and animals are and what they're used for, but that would be a nice way to approach it too.
When you go live, do you have any idea of what proportion of the actual speakers of these varieties would be able to access your resource?
Very small, but with QQ and different cell phone technology, once it's downloaded on someone's computer, then we're hoping it can go more viral.
Yeah.
People don't have as much computer access as they do cell phone access,
yeah.
So we assume that. In the urban areas, like Shangri-La Town, there's enough computer access that it could. But out in the villages, it's mostly cell phones. And China loves cell phone towers. So they're everywhere. I mean, you go out in the middle of nowhere with no running water, no electricity, and they have a cell phone tower. So.
Kind of follow up on why English is in the dictionary. Any chance that, for example, I mean, you mentioned this has been for linguists, but the parts of speech would be put in maybe Tibetan or in some other classification other than English, especially if it's really there more for prestige. I mean, that really helpful to the users at all?
Yeah, we've taken parts of speech in and out, partly because what's a noun and what's a verb is confusing for some words, just easier. But we put it back in. There should be the Chinese part of speech here. For some reason, it's not showing, at least to have the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of speech in Tibetan, in literary Tibetan, they're established. No one uses those terms where we are. They've never heard of them. So the last speaker talked about some. Everything's controversial. If you create new grammatical terminology for written Tibetan, again, that goes in the face of some traditional stuff that's going on. But like the ergative or the transitive, intransitive, causative, resultative, those all have ways to express them in written Tibetan. In our variety Tibetan, people don't. They don't have that metadata available.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's all issues.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yes.